geniuses. I'm afraid it's not Mark Maron, but I'm pleased to announce this is Dan Pashman here with Brendan McDonald, Chris Lopresto. Mark and Mark are not here today. It is Memorial Day, as we know, and they're taking the day off. They will be back tomorrow. Do not fear. But Brendan McDonald, how are you?
Good morning, Dan Pashman. It's good to be here. I can't believe they gave us the keys to this rig.
I'm a little scared. I'm afraid that any minute now someone's going to realize what they've done. But it is 6 past the hour. This is Morning Sedition. It is Air America Radio. And it shouldn't be too far from what you're used to hearing on these Monday mornings.
Well, there's going to be plenty of Mark and Mark in this show, regardless of whether they're sleeping or not right now.
Shoes.
So there he is, right there. I'm used to hearing that. Oh, there's Mark Riley. Good to hear you, Mark Riley, so early this morning.
Kalo is channeling Mark and Mark over there.
But they're going to be present in an interview we have coming up just a few minutes with Tim Robbins and that guy Tyler Gray.
I don't know
if anybody remembers that, but it was all about sex and debauchery at Disney World. So
you can't get too much of that, can you?
Absolutely, especially not on Memorial Day.
Right. And what else is Memorial Day for if it is not sex and debauchery in the Disney family?
It's going to be for our reprise of the Gerald Posner interview, who was a fascinating conversation with Mark and Mark about the Saudi oil destruction plan.
It really was, and I actually re-listened to that interview to edit it and prepare it for broadcast today, and was reminded how great Gerald Posner was in that interview. I actually didn't get to listen to the entire thing when it was airing live. We're going to replay it for those of you who didn't hear it, He does not mince words. Posner really breaks it down and has some very disturbing revelations about the Saudi royal family.
He also managed to piss off a lot of our conspiracy-minded listeners because he's the author of Case Closed, which was a pretty definitive book on the JFK assassination, where he just, you know, outright laid out in 1,000 pages that Lee Harvey Oswald was the lone assassin. I can't tell you how many voicemails I sifted through of enraged conspiracy theorists.
So he allowed this man
on
the air.
Right. Also, Andy Richter going to be on the show today. Another Mark and Mark interview, and all your favorites, Mort Milfington, Lawton Smalls will be here.
Nice.
So it's not going to be unfamiliar to most of you, and also a man who's not unfamiliar to most, Chris Lopresto. Kalo on the board. How are you, Chris?
I'm good, buddy. How you doing?
Okay, glad that you you also braved the early morning commute to not sleep in on Memorial Day and join us here in the studio.
Yeah, you need a little more enthusiasm out of you, Kalo.
No, it was an easy decision, you know, either sleep with my girlfriend or come in and see you two gentlemen.
Well, I'm glad you came because we have a lot of
freedom,
and we're going to be giving that out throughout the show.
Sweet. Yes. No. Thank you for coming in, Kalo. Kalo seemed a little bit down about coming in, but I can see the smile on his face now. You
listen
know,
to the Jew go on.
You're going to listen to him for 3 hours. He's going to keep going on.
No, but I mean, you know, all the other shows in Air America today are all on rerun. You guys realize that, you know. And Morning Sedition, we're the only show that cared enough to send some warm bodies in here and entertain you live and in person, and to bring you. We are going to be including the news of the day, get you people up to speed on what's going on.
Hard hitting news like this. Listen up, Kalo, because this affects you. In England, in the UK. At the top of the charts was expected to be Coldplay, which I know is one of your favorite bands.
I'm going
to
go see them in concert.
Really? Where is that, Radio City?
No, that's actually MSG and PNC Arts Center.
Oh, okay.
You're going twice?
Possibly.
Wow. Making the trip out to New Jersey. Well, anyway, they were supposed to lead the charts this weekend. A lot of the press leading up to the release saying, you know, this band wants to be as big as you, or if not bigger than you too, you know, wants to be the biggest band in the world. Not going to make it to number one.
What do you mean?
They have been bumped out of the number one debut spot.
Wow, in the UK.
In the UK.
By who?
A cell phone ringtone.
What does that even mean?
It's a ringtone called Crazy Frog Axel F. And it's based on the sound of a revving Swedish moped.
Yeah, so
first ringtone to ever chart, and it charts at number one. Coldplay not going to make it to number one this year.
How does it chart exactly? I don't understand.
People are buying it. They're buying this sound.
Is it available on CD or something?
Well, you can buy a single of it now. Apparently, yeah.
Wow. Coldplay got beat out by a moped. I mean, come on.
It had to happen. It had to happen, guys. Come on. That's nothing against the band. I'm sure they were number two, right?
Well, the article here doesn't go on to list what position.
I'm sure they're number two. I mean, come on, Speed of Sound's a great single.
I don't know. Yeah, but did you hear that chainsaw recording of that chainsaw revving? That's like the next big hit. They're gonna have a lawnmower could be the next thing.
The
that
name
all the kids
of this
want.
Thing is Crazy Frog Axel F. I have to imagine that song Axel F. from Beverly Hills Cop is in
right,
the
right.
thing.
Da, 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 da.
Like that'd be. I'm gonna buy the song right now. Are you kidding me?
Kalo, we're going to give Kalo a little homework here during the show. If you don't mind, Kalo, see what you can do with your magic powers on the Internet over the next few segments. See if we can find that song on the Internet. We want to play it for our audience later in the show just to see which moped it was that was able to beat out Coldplay.
I'll do my best.
I mean, these guys want to be bigger than you two, and they can't beat a moped. That's really kind of sad.
Terrible.
Yeah.
Absolutely terrible.
But we do have some real news to hit today, and we're going to be going through that throughout the show. Front page of the Washington Post yesterday and still reverberating. Brennan, you're not going to believe this. The Bush administration is actually going to review their policies in the war on terror.
Well, that sounds positive. Sounds like a good step in the right direction.
You'd like to think so. I mean, I guess it's better than just assuming that everything is going swimmingly.
Right, right. Okay, go on. Tell me more.
Well, it's not quite as rosy as you may think. First of all, this review is months, if not years, overdue, according to many people, in large part because various major offices in these various counterterrorism offices, various positions, rather, in these counterterrorism offices were left unfilled for so long that they weren't able to conduct the review.
Oh.
Yeah, ouch. But even more interesting, and this is what we're going to get into more detail later on in the show, is that they want to broaden the approach in the war on terror, not only focusing on al-Qaeda, where obviously the post 9/11 focus had gone, but they want to go after what they call, quote, a broader strategy against violent extremism, which is a pretty amorphous, pretty vague phrase that could be used to go after pretty much anyone.
Yeah, I think we might qualify under that definition.
That's true. I mean, people have called Morning Sedition and Air America extremist, and I did once see Kalo throw a chair.
Right.
Which is violent. So we might be violent extremists by that definition.
Well, and so in terms of this broadening, are we also going to forget about the actual war that is going on? I mean, it looks like we might have given enough leeway to the alleged mastermind in Iraq, Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, to actually get out of Iraq.
Right.
According to papers this weekend, Zarqawi is reportedly in Iran now.
That's right.
Recovering from shrapnel to his chest and torso. Area. So, you know, and if you recall President Bush's decree following 9/11 that we would go after any country harboring terrorists, I don't know. It leaves a pretty big question mark over what our move is going to be in going after Zarqawi.
Yeah, I think it's pretty clear that was a load, that whole concept. And we're going to get into more detail later, exposing the hypocrisy of the whole notion of the black and white of the war on terror that Bush purports to make it black and white.
And obviously, because it is Memorial Day, we're not going to do what a lot of major media does, and ignore the day and kind of roast some wieners and hot dogs and well, same thing, and hamburgers. And we are going to spend a little time acknowledging why we get this day off and why we have to acknowledge it in light of what's going on right now. Another person who's going to help us acknowledge it tonight will be Ted Koppel and the program Nightline, who once again courageously running all the names of the Iraq War dead, something they were criticized about when they did that last fall.
Criticism this time. I wonder why. We'll speculate on that.
Maybe there's not an election going on.
We will
look at that, and we'll also spend some time to really reflect on Memorial Day, which is what should happen, not just a cookout.
Right, exactly, and I agree. But we got a ton of great stuff coming up this show. Some highlights of the last couple of weeks with Mark Maron and Mark Riley here on Morning Sedition. We have Oscar-winning actor Tim Robbins. Tyler Gray will talk about Disney. Gerald Posner on the Saudis. Andy Richter here. Some of our best comedy bits in the last few weeks. It is 16 past the hour. Morning Sedition, Air America Radio.
MorningSedition.com. Our guests, our comedy, your blog. MorningSedition.com, Air America Radio.
the hour, morning's edition, Air America Radio. This is Dan Pashman with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto.
Hey.
And we're having a good time here. We're in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They will be back tomorrow. It's Memorial Day. That's why they're not here today.
Hey, was that Coldplay,
yeah.
Chris?
Yes, it was.
Hey, you know, here's something else that I think beat Coldplay on the chart this week.
What's that?
Oh, no. Come on.
Hey, that's kind of catchy, you know?
Yeah. Yeah, that just keeps going over and over again. Once again, Coldplay, unseated. Not, he didn't even make it to number one on the chart because of the sound of a Swedish moped. Anyway, Dan, don't you think that people might need to know who the hell we are?
I thought they all knew, Brendan. They don't know? Is that what you're trying to say?
Well, Lewis and Linda Pashman obviously know. Dan Pashman, son of Lewis
so
and Linda
do,
Pashman.
So do Mike and Mrs. McDonald.
Yes, Mike and Dorothy, and they're very happy that we're hosting this. But other people listening might need to know that we are on the production staff here of Morning's Edition. We're not just a couple of schlubs they found on the street.
That
well,
is
the
true.
Schlubs part is
those
debatable.
Two are not mutually exclusive,
right.
Brendan.
You both are the guy behind the guy.
Right. We are that guy.
Yeah, remember that.
All right. Well, here's another guy behind all of us guys, and I actually wonder what his line on us hosting the show today was, because I would have put big money on it.
Right, right.
It's Johnny K Street, our Washington bookie.
There are lots of big stories in the news this week, so it's time to get some bets down with our own Inside the Beltway odds maker, Johnny K Street. Johnny K Street, where's the action, brother?
Follows me, baby.
All right.
All right, here we go. I got Koran action for you.
Uh-huh.
Even Allah would put money on this.
Oh,
5,001. You don't hear George W. Bush say the word Koran in public the rest of the week.
Right.
If he does, I'll not only pay off, I'll play craps at the Taj Mahal wearing a burqa,
all
baby.
Right, I'll take that for 500, Johnny.
I got a C-note right here.
Funny story, if I may.
Uh-huh.
Last night, my brother-in-law, Johnny E. Street, bets a guy at the bar, 10 large, you can flush a Koran down a toilet. The guy says, get a Koran and put your money up. 2 hours later, he's handing over 10 large and cursing Johnny in every language but Farsi. He flushed it one page at a time.
Oh,
he looked at me and
man.
Said, who's in a rush, baby?
Oh, boy. Speaking of the Koran, you're going to get into trouble here, Johnny. Speaking of the Koran, what's the word on Newsweek, brother?
All right, this is a solid bet, uh-huh. Believe me. 5-1, if the White House tries to edit one more magazine, Larry Flint threatens to publish pictures of John Bolton in a Speedo at Plato's Retreat doing a bump off Warren Hutton's ass. Circa 1975.
Oh, I'm down for a G on that, my friend.
Come to think of it, I might have been at Plato's Retreat that night. Put me down for 5 large, Johnny.
You're down.
So you remember it then? What's the line on the 7th filibuster?
Before I give you the lowdown, I want you to mark today on your calendar as so you can look back on it and say, that's a day Johnny K made me rich.
All right.
You ready?
Yeah.
Even money, Bush gets all his nominees, but they find out Priscilla Owen used to work as a madam in Vegas for 2 years and has a black book with every Halliburton executive sexual preference in it. She leaves the bench in disgrace.
Put me down for a grand, bro.
I'm down for $1,000, and I never wanted anything to be true more than this.
Side bet, Dick Cheney in diapers, 2-1. And that's it. One more thing before I go, Mark.
Yeah.
I don't like to say this on the air, but you're into me for about 30 large and the big is running. Just a reminder.
Come on, buddy. Come
maybe
on,
book
buddy.
A few extra stand-up gigs. That's all I'm saying,
while
you can stand. Word to the wise. You're doing good work here. I've got to get to court.
Oh, man.
See you later.
See you later.
Later on, Johnny.
That was Johnny K Street, one of our regular comedy bits here on Morning's Edition. We're going to be doing that throughout the show, playing some of our best comedy from the last few weeks and some of our best interviews from the last few weeks.
With good old Mark and Mark
exactly.
As well.
So even though Mark and Mark are not here in person, we'll give you an adequate dose of them so that you don't have any kind of withdrawal on this 3-day weekend. They will be back tomorrow live. For now, it's me, Dan Pashman, with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto holding down the fort. And just a few minutes, we're going to replay this great interview that the guys did a couple weeks ago. We had Tim Robbins, the actor Tim Robbins, in the studio, and then we had this guy Tyler Gray come by. He wrote an article for Radar Magazine about the dark, seedy, hedonistic underbelly of Disney World and employees and all the crazy stuff that goes on there. And we're going to replay that interview. But I was going to, leading into that, I want to share this funny story you guys appreciate about me. Back when I was a little kid, first time going to Disney World, you know, it's a special moment for all kids.
Right.
Your first trip to Disney World. And as you guys know about me, as you're not shy about teasing me about the fact that I'm a little OCD.
Really?
Yeah, I know. It's weird. You might not have noticed
it. Never thought about that.
And when I get into something, I get into it. Okay? And I decided when I got to Disney World, my obsession of that trip, my focal point was to get the autographs of every Disney character. Oh, you know, they got them all in their costumes,
right,
going around the premises, and you got a little book with these little blank pages. It says autographs. I got this little tiny book, and I'm trying
how
to get.
How old
are
you?
I don't know. 8.
Okay,
that's acceptable.
10.
Yeah.
Tops, 15.
last year.
26. And I'm going around trying to get all the autographs of all the different Disney characters. And to the point that I was getting obsessed, I didn't want to go on any of the rides, didn't want to do anything else. My parents were getting really annoyed. All I wanted was to get the autographs of these characters. And I some of them are a lot harder to get than others. You know, like Tigger, who we'll talk about later, at that point, back then, he was a dime a dozen. There were 10 Goofies all over the park. But some of them are hard to find. And I found the 3 little pigs. And I was like, oh, yes, I don't have the pigs yet. This is awesome. And I run up to the pigs to get their autographs, and they wouldn't give me their autographs.
Why not?
And I'm like, these damn pigs? I need their autographs to finish my collection. And my parents were like, no, they can't sign. I'm like, what do you mean they can't sign? All the other characters sign. How come the pigs can't sign? It turns out they have rubber hands, and they can't bend their hands.
Oh, so what?
That's what I said.
Yeah, that pig better sign with his ass. I want that autograph.
That's right. I'm going to finish my damn collection.
You know, Dan, I also think this was the first time ever said on Morning's Edition. You know, Tigger, who we'll talk about later.
Right, seriously. The famous radio Tigger tea.
The deep teas of Tigger. Well, right. let's let everybody in on the language here. We are teasing right now that Tim Robbins and Tyler Gray from Radar Magazine are coming up. This article hit newsstands a week ago, so you can read it right now while we're talking about it. Go run out there and get it. So while we're talking about the sex and lasciviousness of Cinderella, you can follow along. It's coming right up.
Absolutely. This is Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Screwed the day for everyone listening.
Oh, man, 34 past the hour. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
Chris Lopresto. Hey, guys, Mark Maron and Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. They're just out for Memorial Day. And, hey, speaking of Mark Maron and Mark Riley and all of Morning's Edition, come see us in person this Friday. We'll be broadcasting live from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues from 6 to 9 a.m. We have confirmation now. Musician Mike Doty, formerly of Soul Coughing, now solo career.
Oh.
A friend of the show, a guy we love. We've had him here before. We're very excited. He will be performing live at the City Bakery with us this Friday.
Jealous.
Are you pumped, Kalo?
No, because I'm not going to be there.
Oh, that's right.
I'm going to be here.
He has to stay here and press the button.
You guys are so lucky. He's great in concert.
He is great, and he's going to be great this Friday at the City Bakery. And, hey, drop us an email. Sedition@airamericaradio.com is the show's email address. Tell us how we're doing, unless you think we're not doing well, in which case, keep it to yourself.
I'm sure we'll get plenty of emails cursing us for having played It's a Small World, which will now be in your head for the rest of the week.
Well, you can't get it out of your head once it is in there, but it's going to make a lot more sense why we played
right,
that.
And
right,
and I guarantee
now.
You won't get this out of your head either. The imagery that our next guest, Tyler Gray, will provide you with about Cinderella will have you never watching Disney cartoons in the same way ever again. This is an interview with Mark Maron, Mark Riley, and Tyler Gray from Radar Magazine about the seamy underbelly of Disney World. Also, Oscar winner Tim Robbins sitting in for this interview. Let's hear that now.
Very excited to have Tim Robbins in the studio. His play Embedded will be released on DVD on May 31st. You can go to embeddedlive.com for all the info. He's also in Steven Spielberg's new movie, War of the Worlds, Academy Award winner. Did I already say that? Do I need to say more? Good morning, sir. How are you?
How you
good
doing?
Morning. Nice to be here. And right now, have you ever wondered what Mickey, Goofy, Pluto, and other Disney characters do when the workday ends? Our next guest unmasks the long-suffering, hard-drinking, cross-dressing denizens of Disney World in his article in the premier issue of Radar Magazine, which will be available on newsstands on May 24th. Welcome to the show, Tyler Gray.
Thanks, gentlemen.
Welcome to the morning's edition party.
Yeah.
Big fan since you guys started.
So, right. Dude, I read this piece, and set it up a little bit. You worked at Disney?
No, I didn't work at Disney, but I grew up in Orlando.
Okay.
Kind of like working for Disney. Mm-hmm. I mean, you mentioned the company town, concept of like mining towns where you live and work in the same place. Orlando has kind of that vibe, and everybody knows, the girl I went to the prom with in, 10th grade,
yeah.
She was a dancer at Disney.
A dancer at Disney.
And later at Vegas.
So she stuck with it to the entertainment field.
Exactly.
So now you knew Plutos and Goofies and Mickeys and...
A Goofy was a good friend of mine. we called him Goofy.
So tell me, now, I didn't realize until I read your piece that they actually have housing for the employees.
Yeah, at Disney World in Florida, just, maybe a mile or so off of campus, off of the park, there's this place called Vista Way. And it's one of about three or four places where the college program students can come and live, actually, in Disney contracted housing. The pay comes right out of their paycheck, so they never have to worry. I mean, the rent comes right out of their paycheck, so they never have to worry about paying rent or having, too much real responsibility.
Wow, can they only use Disney money?
No, they're just a step away from minting their own coins. So these guys, they go to work, they come back, and there's just a raging party just about every night in this housing complex. It's called Vista Way, but the nickname is Vista Lay.
Oh, ooh, man. All right, so what goes on? What goes on?
I mean, just imagine like a fraternity and a sorority combined where, the front door is always open on people's places and, you might have five girls living across from five guys and it's like the real world uncensored.
But do they come with their suits? I mean,
there's some swiping of costume pieces here and there that happens.
But, I mean, is there literally moments where someone says, no, put on a head. I want you to do it with a head on.
I wasn't able to experience that particular thing. I heard stories, and there's a quote in there, which I can't really repeat on the air, but it's about Cinderella and her prowess in a certain sexual...
Nice. I think fellatio is okay.
Sorry. Cinderella gives straight.
What was the weirdest pairing? I want to know.
Pairing of characters, actually.
Goofy and
Goofy.
Two and...
But you actually said that they defied each other in a way that it was sort of... These were like legitimate sex parties. That they were saying you had to sort of swap partners and sort of, try to have sex with as many people as possible and whatnot.
I mean... There's a ton of legend out there about these characters and what they do. There is. You get inside these circles and inside these heads of Disney characters, and you start hearing about parties where everybody's making out with somebody else, and it's a Halloween party, and the costumes come out, and people are in drag, and it sounds like something that's would happen at the Grotto. I mean, it can really sound pretty intense.
And Disney's freaked out about they really protect the identity and the reputation of their characters. That was a fascinating thing about the piece.
Which is pretty much what this story is about. I mean, the idea here is that this is a company that holds such a tight reins on their employees that the natural reaction, the equal and opposite reaction, is for them to cut loose like maniacs when they get off the clock, And the more they can bend and break these little laws, the more they can snatch back little pieces of their own personality that they give up on a daily basis for this job.
Go ahead, yeah.
No, I mean, from reading the piece, it sounds as though a lot of these kids are actually programmed, in terms of the persona that they adopt when they get into the outfit.
Right.
How deep is that?
Well, I mean, they go through an intense kind of, an audition. It's like American Idol. I sort of compared it to that, but not...
That's $6.50 an hour?
Yeah.
I don't think
exactly.
So.
Well, 300 kids show up and start applying for these, very few jobs that are available, And by the end of the day, maybe a couple dozen have been selected to be these characters. But from then on, it just goes into a week-long sort of training/indoctrination or whatever you want to call it, into how Disney behaves, how a Disney employee looks, how they, move or point or talk or don't talk if they're in the character costume. it's a real deep kind of, you know, cultural embedment. They have to go through to get out in the park.
But some people, it's their goal. They're not trying to get into movies. They're not trying to get into television. They want to be a Disney character, and that's another theme throughout the piece, is that the adulation that they receive, they're hooked on it. That one of the reasons a lot of these people do it is to be a god of children.
Right. James Stewart, who wrote the Disney War book, you know, which was a great book, he got to put on that costume, the Goofy costume. Mm-hmm. It was just something I would have loved to have done, but you know, maybe I need to win a Pulitzer first. But he put on the costume, and you know, as critical he was of Eisner and everybody involved, he said, when you put that costume on and a kid comes up and hugs your leg like it's the best thing that ever happened to him in his entire life, it all melts away. Like, all the cynicism melts away.
Uh-huh.
And that's what these kids are after, or the kids who go work there are after. They want to be stars, I mean, in the simplest way possible.
So they're hooked on the love the kids have for the characters, and they just sort of transfer that onto themselves. And
yeah, it's kind of
a little creepy.
It's kind of a way of, like, never going.
we got a caller from who says he worked at Disneyland. Mark, what's going on? You got any info for us?
I can't get over it. You're talking about this. This is hysterical. I was an Imagineer there back in the early 70s when they built Space Mountain.
You created rides?
Yeah, I worked at the rides when I was in Disney back, and I was one of the first interns there.
Okay.
I was 19 when I was working there, and I was at the University of Florida.
Good times.
And I went out, I dated Cinderella because let me tell you something. When the first time I ever ran into gay people was in Disney. I didn't, and the greatest thing that happened there was that there were so many gay people working there that there was no competition. So I had the time of my life with these girls. And I mean, and the funny thing is, when he's talking about pairing up, we used to have a joke that the tour guy, you know, at the time, the tour guys only went out with the guys on the Jungle Cruise. That was the way. It was like and the cheerleaders, because the Jungle Cruise was the one that you could do. You could ad-lib on and stuff like that. So it was like,
yeah,
that's your ride that you could go on.
Uh-huh.
But I dressed as Pluto. They let me. What happened was I befriended when I was working. When you're 19, you have nothing else to do there but just have a good time. So I would go after the end of the day, after I was done, you know, working in the office. I was in the basement down below the park. That's where we used to work, was underneath the whole theme park. There's a whole city underneath there.
Yeah.
So I would work down below Main Street. I'd go upstairs, and they would let me dress up as, and like if they needed an extra costume, and I dressed up as Winnie the Pooh, and I dressed up as Pluto. And the guy's right. When you put on let me tell you something. There's nothing like when you get inside one of those costumes, your whole identity gets lost. And you can become something else. And when you have a kid come up to you in a wheelchair or some old person, and it really is an unbelievable feeling. And that's what it is. So a lot of kids there, they want to go into, well, look at all the kids that are like, you know, Britney Spears and all of them. You start off being
look at that.
On the stage. That's what you end up wanting to do, is like you do a theme song there. But so what is this guy, wrote a book or something about this?
Not yet. It's on the way.
No, it's an article in the
Radar. Yeah,
Radar magazine.
Right, Radar.
That's
magazine.
What you call, Mark. Good talking to you.
Yeah. All right, Tyler Gray, the article is Wild Kingdom. It's in the premier issue of Radar magazine. Look for that, and congratulations on the birth of your son. His name is really...
Cash Michael.
All right, Tim Robbins, Embedded, the rock and roll masterpiece on DVD, May 31st. And go to embeddedlive.com and also look for Tim and War of the Worlds. Thank you guys for coming. I appreciate you being here.
Thank you, Mark and Mark. And that was Mark and Mark with Tim Robbins and Tyler Gray. And Dan?
Yes.
Dan Pashman? I have to tell you, this wasn't a very surprising interview to me. I mean, it was fun and I enjoyed it, but
okay.
I mean, Disney, I've kind of drawn a bead on them for a little while now about the way they handle these things. And the thing that kept coming into my mind was Tigger,
right.
Was that story about an actor who was playing Tigger at Disney World, at the Magic Kingdom, and he was charged and put on trial for allegedly groping a young woman, actually a 13-year-old girl,
right.
and the girl's mother. While they were taking photos, he looked like he was copping a feel.
Right.
And if you remember, he went to trial and was acquitted because his lawyer, who was also a Tigger, a guy who was moonlighting as Tigger and was defending him.
Those Tiggers had to stick together.
Right, exactly. And he convinced the jury that there would be no way for you to grope within the Tigger suit. But Disney, you know, was adamant about this not getting out into the press. They wanted to dye the Tigger suit and
right,
so that people wouldn't be affected by it. mean, these stories are nothing new. You know, the lousy conditions that these actors have to go through. Same thing goes for the stories about Disney jail and the underground entrances and that. But Disney has always played fast and loose with the facts in order to protect their image. The image is what they value more than anything, which is a pretty strong parallel with the current administration, which, of course, remains steadfast in its denial of things as varied as detainee torture and manipulation of intelligence and knowledge of pending al-Qaeda attacks pre-9/11. That's just to name a few, okay?
Sure.
And so here you have this one character within the company who is more popular than the company had planned on him being, right, which is kind of like how Colin Powell was. And come to think of it, compared to like the drab black and white schemes of Mickey and Goofy and Minnie Mouse, Tigger is a real person of color in that group, you know?
Really? Yeah.
So, okay, we're getting somewhere now.
A token person of color.
Right. Both of these guys become scapegoats for this company slash administration. Powell for his false comments at the UN about yellow cake, Tigger because of his alleged predilection for tasty cakes, and they're both put out to pasture. And we all know how Colin Powell was unceremoniously dumped for the neocon wonderkin Condoleezza Rice.
Right.
But what happened to Tigger, man? All right, well, the answer is twofold. Of course, we know the actor was then subsequently fired, unceremoniously fired, because of a planned rigged fight that he had gotten in behind
the scenes.
The character, though, and I have this from firsthand experience.
Well, you were there.
I was at Disney World in December, has been scuttled off to the ghetto of indoor meet and greet dinners. No more Cinderella's Castle for him. So my point is this. Some might accuse us of using this Radar magazine story to exploit the sordid tales of Disney debauchery for mere titillation. But I say it's the reaction to the story by Disney that's important. It teaches us all about the world that we live in now. In the face of all that is true, they deny, deny, deny. Know Disney, know your enemy.
Yes,
wow.
Indeed. Perception is reality. The Bush administration uses fake news. They use fake reporters. And that's a very good parallel indeed. Brendan McDonald, well done, my friend. My name is Dan Pastron. I'm here with Brendan and Crystal Presto. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio, 48 past the hour.
Hi, this is Charles Barkley. When I want to get caught up on the world event and I can't get in touch with Shaq, MJ, Larry, or Manute Bol, I turn to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Y'all ready for this?
Two past the hour. It is Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. Mark Maron and Mark Riley will be back tomorrow. We are the producers of the show. Ordinarily, we're behind the scenes, pulling the levers and pressing the buttons. Today, we are out front and center.
You forgot pulling the strings.
Right, and the strings. Tomorrow, we'll be back behind the curtain. Mark and Mark will return. Also, check us out this Friday at the City Bakery in New York City. We're going to be doing a live broadcast. But it is Memorial Day. There is a reason why many people have off today. And no, it is not supposed to be to barbecue. Although that is one thing that most people spend Memorial Day doing, there is a real reason and a serious reason for why we celebrate Memorial Day, why we honor some very important people on Memorial Day, and that's something we want to take a moment now to discuss.
Right, it couldn't be more pertinent than it is today. I mean, that's no disrespect to those who have fought and lost their lives in past international and national conflicts, but really what's going on right now abroad, in Iraq, in the other parts of the world where American troops are stationed and are dying, in Afghanistan and elsewhere, we really have to acknowledge it every day. And, you know, we try to do that here as a part of Morning's Edition, but even we get caught up in the bean counting and the just the kind of numbers game in an analytical way.
Mm-hmm.
And I really want to thank people like Ted Koppel,
Yes.
On Nightline.
Yes.
He's running the list of Iraqi war dead.
I think
tonight.
It's downright courageous.
Yeah. And just really what should be done. It's a shame that he's the only one. Well, he's not the only one, because also Gary Trudeau, who we like very much here
absolutely.
At Morning Sedition, he listed in his comic Doonesbury, which always has a little bit of an American slant, you know, of what's going on in modern day America. He listed the names of the dead in six panels in yesterday's Doonesbury, found in Sunday newspapers. There are so many dead U.S. service people that he'll actually have to continue doing it next week, which is also courageous for him to do. On not on Memorial Day, but also very sad that it's going to have to take up two full editions of his comic strip in order to fit all the names. And as we said, Ted Koppel will read the names and show photos of 900 American dead. That's on a 45-minute telecast of Nightline tonight. If you remember, Dan, back in the fall, Nightline did this and was excoriated by the right-wing media for doing this, said that it was treasonous and unpatriotic, and Sinclair Broadcasting,
which is a shill for the right wing.
Exactly, right wing broadcasting group that owns some ABC affiliate stations. They refuse to carry Nightline. They're going to carry it now because it's Memorial Day, which has nothing to do with the fact that there's no presidential election.
Exactly.
Going on.
Well, we all know that's the real reason why they fought it. I mean, it is so offensive and so twisted, and so also I would say indicative of the facility with which this administration manipulates information and ideas.
Right.
To say that honoring those who have served and died defending America is unpatriotic.
Right. Which is part of that, you know, that ploy that they use, you know, well, do you support the war on terror? And when you say, well,
right.
I don't really agree with the way it's being run. Oh, you're un-American!
Right, right. I mean, it is really, really messed up. And as I was saying to Brent yesterday, you know, one of my jobs here at Air America is I get in every day, I send out this big email to the staff with a lot of the news of the day. And one of the things that's included in that is the latest death toll out of Iraq and Afghanistan for U.S. service members. And I've been doing that since Air America launched, and it was in the hundreds when Air America launched. Now it's in the thousands. But even I see that number go up almost every single day. And even when I see that number, sometimes it really hits me. It's like that number, you know, it was 1,604 yesterday. Now it's 1,607. And it's like, well, what does that mean? That's just a number. Well, you know what? That's three more lives. That's three more human beings that have been lost. And it's important not to forget that here on Memorial Day. And people are still dying. Someone is going to die today in the Middle East. It might not be a U.S. service member, although there's a pretty good chance. If not, some innocent Iraqi is going to get killed. Someone's probably going to die in the next hour. It's Memorial Day. We're going to change the pace when we come back at 7 o'clock. We're going to play the Morning Remembrance, which is a comedy bit, a little different from what we're doing now. But it's Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Blah, blah, blah. Good morning, geniuses. Morning's edition, Air America Radio. It is 6 past the hour. That explosion denotes the fact that the show is not being run today by Mark Maron, Mark Riley, and instead it's being run by me, Dan Pashman, with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. Mark and Mark will be back tomorrow. Happy Memorial Day.
Good morning, everyone. You may know us by our names only. Mark Maron throwing little shout-outs to us from time to time on the air. We are the production staff here at Morning's Edition. Today we have the keys to the car.
That's right. We're running it, and we're holding down the fort. Drop us a line, sedition@airamericaradio.com. Tell us how we're doing, unless you think we're doing poorly. If you think Brandon and I should have a show on the weekends, feel free to include that in your email.
And also related to email, hello to Joe in Brazil.
Yes, Joe in Brazil.
Who just sent us an email saying, you know, people do work on Memorial Day in other places, so make sure you acknowledge us hard workers out there. And so yes, we do acknowledge you as well, Joe in Brazil.
That's right. The way this show has been working and will continue to work today is that Brandon, Chris, and I are playing a few of the highlights of Mark Maron and Mark Riley over the past couple of weeks. Some great interviews we did, some great comedy bits. We're interspersing those with reporting the news of the day and joking around and having a good time on our own. And with that in mind, we've got one of our favorite bits coming up right now, Brendan.
Yep, a favorite of all Mornings Edition fans. For some reason, they love the little guy. It's Lawton Smalls.
Right now, since our president is openly operating in a different reality, we think it's important that Americans know what's happening in his alternate universe. Universe? Weird. Luckily, we have a staffer who lives in that world, so now on the phone once again is Planet Push Bureau Chief Lawton Smalls. Good morning, Lawton.
Good morning, Mark. By the way, there's plenty of Indians in Boston.
Uh-huh.
But listen, a lot of good tamborers.
So
may the force be with you, by the way.
Uh-huh.
The force of Jesus.
All right, okay, take it easy. So speaking of Star Wars, here's some of you neocon types are unhappy about the new Star Wars movie.
Mark, wrote that piece of cow flop?
Oh, boy.
Ted Kennedy? Tim Robbins? We got to clean up Hollywood, Mark.
So, what
liberal disaster.
What bothered you so much, Lawton?
Everything.
Oh, no.
But for starters, okay, they're up there in space having a war on terror against the two evildoers, Dooku and Grievous. That's Osama and al-Zarqawi, clearly.
Okay, if you say so.
So the chancellor asked for more executive power from the Senate to wipe them out, you know, shock and all.
Come on.
That old boy just wants to keep the liberal surrender monkeys out of the way and get the job done. But what happened?
What?
Those obstructionists turn their left-wing attack machine on this distinguished patriot and turn him into a mean, wrinkled old wizard.
Oh.
Tom DeLay all over.
Back up, one. So the Jedi are the villains?
Let me tell you about the Jedi.
Oh,
That's your typical smarty-pants elitist. Think they know better than everybody else.
Oh, no.
Look at my lightsaber. Aren't you impressed?
Oh,
woo-hoo-hoo.
Oh, boy.
Academics, artists, scientists, all
mm-hmm.
of their tinfoil mm-hmm.
yeah,
hats,
yeah, yeah.
all hiding behind their fancy degrees.
Uh-huh.
Up to the Jedi, they try to talk the terrorists to death.
Okay, you know
typical.
What? I'm not buying it. What about Yoda? Is he in on the conspiracy, too?
Oh, Yoda. Who's that little lizard supposed to be, anyway? Robert Byrne?
Oh, man.
I don't need a lecture on national security from some green Muppet.
Oh, boy.
Can't even put together a complete sentence. Stupid, he does talk, Mark.
Hey, but wait, whoa, back up. The pre-Vader character, is clearly headed down the path toward evil.
All right, Mark, just because a brat kid wants to join the party, learn the ropes of the Chancellor, kind of like Rick Santorum,
mm-hmm.
suddenly he's evil and he's gone to the dark side. That's just hate speech, Mark, hate
uh-huh.
speech. Believe me, we don't let the dark side into our party. Never have.
Uh-huh.
I just Alan Keith. We don't let it happen.
Come on.
Wait,
at one point, Anakin says, if you're not with me, then you're my enemy. Sound familiar, my friend?
Is the Gettysburg Address familiar, Mark?
Oh,
it's
come
just
on.
Offensive to me. Some Hollywood director would turn one of George W. two-terms Mandate Bush's greatest proclamations into some kind of a sick Jedi punch.
Well, you know what, Lawton? This is a work of fiction.
No,
it's a work of fiction. If you're upset by what's in it, maybe you should ask yourself why you're so upset. Is it because it shows an out-of-touch leader who oversteps his bounds and leads people into a meaningless war? Is it because the Emperor tries to manipulate the Senate to further his own selfish ends? Let me be more direct, my friend. Is it because Bush is exactly like that evil bastard in the movie?
The biggest Star Wars fan in the world.
Wow. Okay.
I went to the premiere last week dressed as Chewbacca.
Oh.
My bed was covered with Ewok baby.
Oh, boy.
You know, I see Star Wars movies 50 or 60 times just to escape my miserable reality. And then they show me a story about how bad Bush is.
Oh.
And it's true.
Yes.
He's a Sith.
Yes.
He's a freaking Sith.
All right. All right. Take it easy. Take it easy, buddy. Just, all right. Let it out, you freak. All right. Just take it easy. It's just a movie, dude. All right. All right. Just, you all right? Okay. Okay. Just. All right. Get hold of yourself. Oh, my God. What is that?
I think I caught your cold. And why has Obi-Wan got a beard in this? Are we supposed to think he's Jesus? Because that's wrong. That's blasphemous.
Goodbye, Lawton.
God loves you, Mark.
deal with it.
Yeah, that's what I hear. Yeah, okay. You take care.
I think Lawton Smalls is going to be back tomorrow on Morning's Edition when Mark and Mark are here live, but it's always good to hear from him, hear what the other side is doing. Speaking of the other side,
yes.
Matt Drudge posted on his website yesterday, the Drudge Report, that Star Wars was going to lose in this weekend's box office stakes. Whatever it is you make of that box office category, we won't get into that right now. But the fact is, Drudge took glee in the fact that Star Wars was going to lose because he had been a champion of pointing out that the movie has a left-wing bias,
right,
which we had discussed last week on the program. Well, turns out that was Friday's estimate that he was going on, and I'm looking at the receipts right here from the box office report on Box Office Mojo, which says the movie's in line to take the weekend, all 4 days, and we'll finish out with about $270 million in the bank.
And it's funny, Matt Drudge actually changed his original post.
He did! No correction or anything.
Right.
He just changed and said, Sith wins the weekend.
Yeah.
So, and you know what was great was that last week, or when the movie first opened, we had Yoda studio to talk about this this allegation of bias. Can we hear that, Chris?
That's a... Oh, my God.
Whoa!
Uh-oh. Oh, you know, Chewbacca was here yesterday, and I don't believe it. Look, it's Yoda. Look,
what?
He's walking into the room slowly.
Oh, my God.
Hey, let me help him on the chair. Hold on.
Hold on. You okay? You all right, man?
How are you?
Ooh, well, I am.
Well, I am.
Help you out? I can.
Now, there's been a lot of talk, Yoda, about this being a political movie.
Ooh, biased this movie is not.
But some Republicans are very upset.
Oh, whack these bastards be. Nothing but haters these bitches are.
So, but you're saying that you don't play partisan politics, and the movie doesn't either.
Well, Hillary 2008.
Thank you for stopping by, Yoda.
Nothing but haters these bitches are.
There you go, right from Yoda's mouth.
If I had a nickel for every time I heard Yoda say that, man, yeah. I'd tell you what. But, you know, one other quick note on Drudge. It amazes me how many people still do not know that Drudge is a conservative site. How many people think that it's just a site that sort of filters the news for you and lets you read the headlines? They constantly twist and short. It is a conservative site.
The saddest thing is the people, a lot of people, I mean, obviously they know this, but that don't follow that as a tenet of using the site are news outlets.
Right.
That site sets a news agenda for a lot of places.
Big time. I know CNN's got nothing else.
Right. They're like, oh, wait, a hurricane? Let's get over there.
Right. CNN's like, oh, my God, Drudge's site is down. All right, we're off the air.
Yeah.
But we're going to keep it rolling here. We got a great segment coming up. We're going to replay an interview that Mark and Mark did with Gerald Posner with some really interesting and explosive revelations about the Saudi kingdom. We're also going to report some big news that was on the front page of the Washington Post regarding the Bush administration's war on terror, that war they love to fight, that war they don't ever want to end. And we're going to be breaking all that down for you. It's 15 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is former Labor Secretary Robert Reich, and you're listening to Mark Maron and Mark Riley. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. Brendan McDonald, I've never seen this side of you. Wow. This is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Nothing but haters these bitches have.
To quote Yoda. Chris Lopresto is here. Mark Maron and Mark Riley have the day off. It is Memorial Day. They will be back in full effect tomorrow. And, hey, this Friday, come check out Mark and Mark and the entire Morning Sedition crew. We're going to be broadcasting live from the City Bakery in New York City. It's on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. We'll be there 6 to 9 a.m. Musician Mike Doty, one of our favorite guests, will be playing live. New York Post gossip columnist Paula Froelich will be there to dish some dirt. We're going to be giving away tons of free stuff, especially to the early arrivers,
mm-hmm.
and it's going to be a ton of fun. We are really, really pumped for that. But right now, we need to get into some of the hard-hitting news of the day. specifically this front page story in the Washington Post that it was there yesterday. People are still talking about it today, and it's no mistake that this story broke over Memorial Day weekend. The Bush administration has taken this common political tactic to new heights, the tactic of letting out the big stories when nobody is paying attention to the news. But fortunately, we're here at Air America to report this stuff for you. Review may shift terror policies, a big shift in the Bush administration's war on terror. They're going to be doing a high-level internal review of their efforts to battle international terrorism, a long-overdue review, many people say, and also, but not only long overdue because the Bush administration never likes to admit when it's wrong, but also because they had so many open positions in the Department of Homeland Security and in the various counterterrorism offices that they weren't able to conduct this review, but they're finally going to do it. It's underway, and apparently one of the big changes we can look to is that they're going to move the focus, Brendan, away from al-Qaeda and towards what they call, quote, a broader strategy against violent extremism.
Right. I don't think that was exactly the review that we had in mind.
Right.
And you're absolutely right, though, Dan. This was put out there on a weekend when a lot of people are away and aren't going to pick up a paper or watch the television, and no fault of their own. They should. They've earned their hard-earned three-day weekend.
Sure.
And this is going out there as a, you know, a floated phrase, this phrase of
review,
right, and of broader strategy against violent extremism.
Yes.
Let's see what we can pull underneath that umbrella.
Exactly.
What is violent extremism? Well, you know, we can define it as al-Qaeda. We can also obviously define it as, groups within the Aryan Nation.
Mm-hmm.
But we can define it as eco-terrorists.
Exactly.
The Earth Liberation Front or, the animal, the PETA, animal activists. And granted, we've had our issues with the people at PETA before and the way that they go about their activism. But are we really worried about what somebody protesting the use of KFC chickens is going to do, and someone who is protesting our diplomatic policies abroad and the oppression of their religion is going to do to us?
Exactly, exactly. I mean, this is very disturbing stuff, and I should say, look, I was having this debate with my girlfriend, and she was saying, well, if PETA, will blow things up too, so some of these far-left groups are militant. And look, we don't condone any kind of violence, all right? But the rules need to be applied fairly and equally. Recent history has shown us that the Bush administration is very willing to use the war on terror as an excuse and as a front to intimidate and harass left-wing political groups. The New York Times editorial page last week put it perfectly. They said a draft planning document from Homeland Security obtained by Congressional Quarterly includes a survey of domestic threats notable for an over-focus on extremist groups on the political left. Glaringly omitted are the militia fanatics, white supremacists, and other violent groups at the other end of the spectrum. Anti-government groups like Aryan Nation and anti-abortion extremists with a proven appetite for murderous violence. Now, on top of that, the ACLU and five other groups are suing to get records from the FBI to show that the FBI is using its counterterrorism duties to monitor anti-war and other political groups instead of actually fighting real terrorism. All right, so you have the FBI abusing their power. You have the Department of Homeland Security abusing their power. Basically, once again, we have yet another department of the Bush administration that has been turned into nothing more than a political arm in a political game.
Right, and need we remind you that the last attack on American soil before 9/11 was a militia group.
That's right.
It was the Oklahoma City bombings. And so the oversight here is it's this fascinating game, shell game that they can play with who is our enemy and who are these violent extremists? Who do we really have to be worried about? And I'll tell you what I'm worried about. I'm worried about the guys who are still ready to attack us. And as we see from the papers this weekend, those guys might be going to other countries,
mm-hmm.
making the problem even worse. We had an initial situation where we went and invaded Afghanistan. Well, that spread because of our misplaced aggression in Iraq. And now it looks like that's going to spread even further, too. This report over the weekend from a British newspaper that Abu Musab al-Zarqawi, the leader of al-Qaeda in Iraq, has fled to Iran
to recover from his injuries that have been reported. All of this is reported in British newspapers, and Iran is flatly denying it, although we wouldn't expect them to say, sure, you know, we got him a cozy bed.
Yeah, did you see the quote from the spokesman from Iran? This is hilarious. Iran is a clear and transparent country where such covert activities do not take place.
Yes.
It's kind of like the Iranian Scott McClellan.
Right. He said, this is an unprofessional kind of fabricating news. We would like it to be more professional, like the way the Bush administration does it.
Yeah, we're still learning from them. Right. We don't quite have it
and
down.
You know, Dan, let's lay it right out here. Zarqawi, the Bush administration can claim whatever they want about how they have tried to pursue him and that he has slipped through the cracks the same way Osama bin Laden has and has wound up in the caves in Pakistan or in southern Afghanistan. We had three chances to get Zarqawi within the last 3 years.
That's right. We had three opportunities, and as we know, although it has not been reported hardly at all in the mainstream media, the Bush administration decided not to take Zarqawi out on purpose. They chose not to take this guy out because they wanted to leave him there so that when we got into Iraq, we could say, look, a terrorist. That's why we're here.
Right. June 2002, October 2002, and January 2003. Look them up, people. These were times, specific times, when the U.S. dropped the ball in trying to, in attempts that they had to capture al-Zarqawi.
That's absolutely right. And in this Washington Post article about the review of the terror policies, they said that top government officials are increasingly turning their attention to anticipate what one called the bleed out, quote, of hundreds or thousands of Iraq-trained jihadists back to their home countries, and Zarqawi is one of the leaders of that whole movement.
Well, when we get back, we're going to hear this interview with the author of Secrets of the Kingdom, Gerald Posner, who talks about what's going on with Saudi oil fields, which all plays into what we're talking about right now. This is the misplaced idealism of the Bush administration into fighting this broad war on terror that will never end and will help them continue business like we're about to hear from Gerald Posner. Air America.
You're listening to Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, this is Morning Sedition on Air America Radio. My name is Dan Pashman, here with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. We are holding down the fort. Mark Riley and Mark Maron will be back tomorrow. It is Memorial Day. Hey, come check out us and, of course, Mark Maron and Mark Riley, the normal hosts of this show. This Friday, see us in person. We'll be broadcasting live from City Bakery in New York City on 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenues. 6 to 9 a.m. Musician Mike Doty will play live. It's going to be tons of fun. We're going to give away some free stuff. It's going to be pretty great. I am really, really pumped for that gig. Right now, we're going to, throughout this show, we're playing some of our best interviews from the last couple weeks that Mark and Mark conducted, some of our best comedy bits. And we visited with Gerald Posner, the author, recently. He had some explosive allegations, or rather information, with regard to the Saudi royal family and their oil fields. Brendan, let's tell the people about that.
Right, right. It's one of the treats of being a producer of this show is to get to come across guests like this and be as interested as they are, as I am in them before they go to air, and then to have the hosts just really kind of latch onto them and enjoy what the person has to say. And that really happened with Gerald Posner here. He is the author of Secrets of the Kingdom, The Inside Story of the Saudi-U.S. Connection. His other best-selling books include Why America Slept, The Failure to Prevent 9/11, and Case Closed, Lee Harvey Oswald and the Assassination of JFK. Great book. And let's hear now from Gerald Posner with Mark Maron and Mark Riley.
Good morning, Gerald Posner.
Hey, Mark, how are you?
Good morning. I'm pretty good. So you're fresh off of CNN over there, and you know I've been pretty shocked to hear what you have to say. How you basically are saying in your book that the Saudis have rigged their entire oil field operation to self-destruct if necessary if the House of Saud is overthrown.
Yeah, I mean, what they've done is they've hit what they call their panacea targets. I mean, their infrastructure is enormous. I mean, you know, literally, I mean, the biggest oil field over there, this place called Gawar, is 100 miles by 25 miles wide. It's not like we think of as just a number of oil rigs. And the facilities themselves, I mean, cover hundreds of acres. So you couldn't rig the entire thing, but you could rig what they call key points, targets that bring the system down and make it difficult for either an insurrection, an al-Qaeda insurrection, or a foreign army like Iraq to take control of the fields and run them. So it would be down for 2 to 3 months. And what they've done to make it even more difficult is put in a number, maybe several dozen, of these so-called dirty bombs that will spread and contaminate radiation around key facilities, making it tough for workers to get back in unless they want to run an increased risk of, you know, of cancer over the long term. So that it's really an effective way of saying, look at guys, if you let us fall, I'm taking my toys with me.
That's all, you know. Now, is this something that you broke, or is this something that they know on the streets of Saudi Arabia? I mean, is this something the world has known?
No, here's the thing. The world, I didn't know it until I did this for the last 2 years. It took me 2 years to get this source to finally start to open up and provide me some of the documents from the NSA file. Here's who I'm convinced didn't know it. They don't know it on the streets of Saudi Arabia. They don't. The public doesn't know it. Who knew it was behind the scenes at the government level. The NSA knew it because they've been electronically intercepting these conversations since 1986.
Wow.
They started with the Saudi embassy in Washington, and they were back and forth between officials in Riyadh, members of the House of Saud, and executives then at construction companies in Italy and France. But they didn't pick up steam until after the first Gulf War, when the Saudis were afraid that Iraq might swoop down and take their oil fields, and then American troops went over there. After that is when they started to accumulate the unmarked Semtex from Czechoslovakia and put together a much more sophisticated network. So the interesting part about this is the two administrations would have been on top of this. It would have had the Clinton administration and now the Bush administration. When you've got Bush holding hands with the Crown Prince down in Crawford, Texas, he's also aware of the fact that our so-called allies, the Saudis, who have barely done anything to stop terror financing, who have not followed any of the rules, constrictions, or suggestions from the Treasury Department on closing the money spigot out to the Wahhabi extremists around the globe, and have done virtually nothing in reining in the extremists outside of their own borders, that these are the same fellows who are saying, by the way, we could take off a third of the world's oil supply and do it overnight, and then dirty the fields up so you can't get in for a long time, sending the West into a tailspin. So remember, George, be nice to us, and make sure you don't let us fall like the Shah of Iran in 1979. I think it's a fairly effective form of playing blackmail.
Wow.
Gerald, talk, if you would, for a moment, about some of the allegations that have been made about the closeness between the House of Saud and the Bush family specifically, because you very correctly point out that the House of Saud has been dealing with a number of U.S. presidents. Is the relationship between the House and the Bush family closer and more sinister than most people believe?
Yeah, I think that here's what makes the Bush association with the House of Saud particularly bothersome. And therefore, you know, whether it's closer or not, it's tough to say, because every American president from FDR and on has sort of kowtowed to the Saudis because of the oil. We've cut them slack. Even Jimmy Carter, when he was talking about human rights and using it all over the world, was cutting slack for the Saudis because he wanted them to support at that time the Middle East peace agreement with Camp David, which they didn't support, but he was still trying to be nice to them. So they've all been nice to him. But the Bush administration clearly has had business in the oil industry, and the appearance of impropriety was higher for them. Coming into office, you think they would have held themselves up to a higher standard, but they did not. But then 9/11 changed the entire equation. You had Bush take to the American public after 9/11 and give that, you know, that speech that was very dramatic, in which he said, you're either with us or against us. Boy, that sounded good on its surface, but for the Saudis, it doesn't apply, because he's applied a special rule to them. They can be both with us and against us. They've got one foot in each camp. They give us a little bit of information behind the scenes about al-Qaeda. They take a few slow steps regarding closing up some of the charities that funnel money to terrorists. And then, on the other hand, they continue to have their Wahhabi clerics espouse some of the most violent sort of anti-Americanism inside the big mosque in Saudi Arabia. The Christians are called crusaders, Jews are called infidels, and you may have seen the report just a couple of weeks ago that said up 50 to 60% of the people who have blown themselves up as suicide bombers in Iraq turn out to be Saudis. Now, that's an astonishing number, but I'm not surprised, because they're filled with hatred from inside the kingdom about the West.
Right. Isn't Gerald Posner, I mean, isn't it, the bottom line is also is that the guys who flew into the World Trade Center weren't 19 of them were Saudis, weren't they?
Yeah, 15 of the 19 were Saudis.
All right.
And when you get into this, it's not surprising. And here we are. You know, this is amazing. Here's Bush going into Iraq saying, we're going to open up the Middle East for democracy. Well, hey, guess what, George? Next door, you've got a neighbor of the crown prince you're holding hands with, and you could open up a little bit of democracy there. How about little things? Why don't we get the right for women to be able to get driver's license? That's the only country in the world that interprets Islam to say women can't drive, much less vote. Forget about voting. In a court of law, a woman's testimony is only given half the weight of a man's testimony. If you are the daughter, when your father dies, you can only receive by law half of what your brothers can receive. And if you're a married woman, you can only travel outside of the country, by the way, if your husband gives you permission. In the recent so-called elections that were window dressing, that looked like democracy, they had elections where some members of a consulting conference, sort of like a parliament, were elected for the first time. Only men were allowed to vote. Fewer than 20% came out to vote. And even then, all this group can do is give a recommendation because in the end, the king makes the decision. So if Bush is serious about spreading democracy in the Middle East, how about pushing our Saudi friends to open up a little bit of democracy, a small door there? It's just not being done. Plus, I must tell you that over time, the Saudis have been very good. I mean, one of the things that I think people will be surprised at in the book is the extent to which the Saudis have lobbied in the U.S. with millions of dollars, countering the Israeli lobby almost step for step to win big, big contracts. And they're no slouches. There's reasons why the U.S. government is so kind to this country beyond just oil, and that's part of what I try to expose here in this sort of look at this history of this dysfunctional relationship.
Wow, Gerald Posner, amazing, provocative book, it sounds like. Secrets of the Kingdom, the Inside Story of the Saudi-U.S. Connection. Appreciate you being here.
Thanks so much for having me.
All right, that was Mark Maron and Mark Riley with author Gerald Posner recently here on Morning Sedition. I'm Dan Pashman with Brendan McDonald and Crystal Presto. Mark and Mark will be back tomorrow. But, you know, Brendan, one of the things about that interview that really stuck with me when I was going back through it preparing to re-air it on this show was just how very hypocritical. You know, we all make everyone likes to talk about how Bush likes to see things in black and white and the whole, if you're not with me, you're against me and the access of evil and all this stuff.
Mm-hmm.
But that's all a load. It's just a load of crap. That isn't even the way he governs. Okay? And the number one best example of that hypocrisy, the number one best example of how absurd his whole, if you're not with us, you're against us line is his relationship and his way of dealing with the Saudis and their government.
It really is the defining reason as to why we are involved in international diplomacy the way we are.
Mm-hmm.
The everything that Posner was saying there, whether, you know, you might want to question, you know, facts that he comes up with, and I know people take him to task for that JFK book that he wrote, which you can have whatever opinion about that
right.
you want, but what he's saying is a known fact about the diplomatic relations that the presidents of the United States have always had with the Saudis because of their oil. And how do you think, Dan, that this new review of terror policies, this strategy against violent extremism, is going to play out in Saudi or the U.S. Relations with Saudi Arabia? I would venture to guess, if I was Johnny K Street, I'd put money on it being not very likely,
right.
despite all the human rights abuses and violent extremism and terrorists that are born out of Saudi Arabia, 15 of 19 that flew planes into U.S. buildings.
Exactly. I mean, Bush will go around and say, he says he wants to spread democracy. That's what this guy, that's why we went into Iraq. Well, first we went into Iraq to make America safer. Then it turned out, you know, once it was apparent that he wasn't accomplishing that, now he says we're going into Iraq to spread democracy. You want to spread democracy? How about not having the Prince of Saudi Arabia over to your house in Crawford and sticking your tongue down his throat? All right. That's one way to not spread democracy.
That's also one way to interpret a handshake.
So they kissed.
All right. Okay.
Okay, there was kissing. All right, you don't kiss a guy if you think that he's not spreading democracy. If you're George Bush and you're saying, I am this guy that's going to go around the world spreading democracy, freeing all the oppressed peoples of the world, the fact is that women in Saudi Arabia are oppressed. Why doesn't he want to free them?
Right.
Okay?
Right.
And the fact is that Saudi Arabia is part of the problem, not part of the solution. You want to talk about if you're not with us, you're against us? Saudi Arabia sure as hell is not with us.
Well, and we'll see.
That must mean they're against
them. We'll also see how that applies to Iran now that they are allegedly harboring international terrorist Abu Musab al-Zarqawi.
Well, yeah, and the 9/11 Commission themselves said that Iran had more to do with 9/11 than Iraq.
Right, absolutely. Well, these are all great points, and we're glad that we had Gerald Posner on so that we could revisit this. This is not something that you should just hear one time and let it go. This is, as I said, I really believe that this is the crux of the situation that we're in right now, is the relationship that we have with the ruling classes in the Middle East. To get off of that topic quickly, I just want to say, when we talk about spreading democracy, we also should remember that we're here on Memorial Day for that very reason, that we are honoring people who died spreading democracy, true democracy, and we really shouldn't forget it at any minute throughout the day today.
That's right. So when you're lighting up your grills and you're with your friends and family having fun, do remember that Memorial Day is a holiday for a reason, and let's remember that. Coming up in the next segment, we got one of our favorite comedy bits. We're replaying some of the best comedy bits in the last couple weeks here on Morning's Edition. We're going to talk to the liberal aggressor, this guy that's starting an underground
revolution.
He started the revolution, but he hasn't quite been able to get it off the ground
or
yet.
Get a name that works.
Well, it used to be Poodle, right?
Yeah. Right, it was Poodle, it was Balls, and this guy's got a lot of issues.
Balls, that's my favorite.
It's pretty funny. We're going to have that in the next segment. It's 47 past the hour, Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Rob Corddry from The Daily Show, here to remind you that when top news reporters and investigative journalists like me want their news skewed so far to the left it's wearing a dress, we turn to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. My name's Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Yep.
Chris Lopresto is here. Mark Maron and Mark Riley are out for Memorial Day. They will be back in action in full effect tomorrow. Hey, drop us a line. Sedition@airamericaradio.com is the email address. Throughout this show, in addition to updating you on a lot of the most important news of the day, we've been playing some great moments from the show over the past couple of weeks. And right now we have a great phone call we got that Mark and Mark took. Let's revisit that moment.
The yelling guy, the guy from Poodle. Or is it Balls? I forget.
Anyway, yeah, that guy.
He's on line one.
Okay, all right, put him through. Hey, man, what's going on? So how's that thing you're working on going?
You mean the revolution?
Yeah, how's the revolution going? Did you guys come up with a better name yet?
I'll admit we have made some unfortunate mistakes in the naming of our group in the past. We are no longer known as NAMBLA, Poodle, Gals, or Balls. We are now called the Tactical Elite and Battle Action Group.
Okay, so you're going with Teabag.
Teabag, Mark. We will go out across the land, find the evil, slanderous conservatives where they live, and teabag them into submission. They will feel one thing above all others, a stern and ferocious teabagging.
All right. Well, I think this is something you're going to have to find out on your own, buddy. But make sure you send me one of those T-shirts before you burn them, okay? So last week your group had a big, scary, revolutionary brunch. How'd that go?
The turnout at our rally...
Brunch.
Rally was disappointing, to say the least.
Oh, I'm sorry.
It was me, my Shih Tzu stompers, who cannot be left alone, my girlfriend, who, while not actually there, as she had a shift at Crabtree and Evelyn, but assured me she would join the rally on conference call, and the Johnsons had to leave early, as their toddler Ben is an albino. Naturally, the outdoor table irritated his corneas. But the Revolutionary Council took a vote.
You mean you and Stompers?
Yes, me and Stompers.
Oh, yeah.
And we decided that what T-Bag needs more than anything is a recruiting drive.
Ah, recruiting drive. Since it's just you and Stompers, you decided, hey, maybe some people would help kick this revolution into high gear, huh?
Exactly.
All right, buddy. So where'd you start the recruiting drive?
My apartment complex. Chantilly by the lake. Stompers and I took the elevator to the top floor and vowed to T-Bag our way to the very bottom.
So how many floors is that, man?
Four.
Oh. And how many apartments would you say are in the complex?
As many as 16, I think.
So how many recruits did your liberal action group make?
Well, I think the hour I chose may not have been the best. I found that at 11:30 a.m., most of my potential recruits were at work.
Oh, so you mean all of them were at work?
No, Mark. It might surprise you to learn I had a very successful recruiting day. Heed the names of my new lieutenants that shall haunt the dreams of the right wing. Rosa, the screaming lady, and even a seventh grader who was homesick that day but would not open the door all the way. But even through that narrow slot, I managed to teabag him.
Well, you must be very proud of yourself, man. Well, the police are on their way over to you. Why don't you tell me a little bit about that badass revolutionary Rosa?
Rosa?
Yeah.
She spoke no English, but I could see in her the burning spirit of Che. So Stompers and I, and Rosa, and Ethan, as soon as he asks his parents, will begin our assault on the neocons. To war, Mark! To war!
Okay, so it's you and Rosa, a 12-year-old boy, and a little dog. Buddy, that's not a revolution. That's the Wizard of Oz.
Oh, the story of Teabag will not be a story for children, I can assure you.
You can say that again. I can't take it anymore. I can't let you do this any longer. All right, listen, buddy. Are you in front of a computer right now?
Yes.
Okay. Type in the word teabag, all right, into the Google image search bar. All right, go ahead. I'll wait.
Okay. T-E-A-B-A-G. There. Let's... Oh, good sweet Lord! What am I
doing? Oh, my God.
Oh, boy. So there you have it. That was the guy from the revolutionary group formerly known as Teabag.
So before you all go running to your computer to Google Teabag, stay with Morning's Edition. We're coming back with more comedy from Mark and Mark, plus Andy Richter, former sidekick from Conan O'Brien, currently in the animated film Madagascar. He'll be here with Mark Maron, and also Dan Pashman and myself, Brendan McDonald. Stay with us, Air America.
Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
We haven't crashed yet. 6 past the hour, Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. Good morning, everybody. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald.
Good morning.
And Chris Lopresto.
Good morning.
We're holding down the fort for Mark Maron and Mark Riley. They will return tomorrow. It is Memorial Day. We're having some fun. We're also trying to remember why it is Memorial Day and what the purpose of Memorial Day is. And with that in mind, Brendan, you were taking part in a Memorial Day ritual of sorts this weekend.
Well, yeah, I mean, everybody, obviously, they have a cookout and, it's generally certain traditions associated with it, as well as honoring our war dead.
Sure.
But also the Indy 500. Mm-hmm. Every Memorial Day weekend,
yeah.
The big news this year was Danica Patrick,
the woman,
first female to race in the Indy 500. Actually, first female to ever lead,
yes,
in the race. And she settled for fourth place, didn't win, but actually, you know, made a very good showing for herself.
Yeah, I was pulling for her.
I'm talking about this with a great deal of authority.
What do you mean?
But this, I just figure I sound pretty authoritative.
He's talking
right now.
As if you were a car racing aficionado.
The real deal is that, now, let me preface this.
Right.
I mean, I like sports.
Right.
Now, normally, this kind of talk doesn't happen on this show,
sure,
because Mark Maron is averse to sports. Not that he,
right,
hates sports, he just doesn't seem to, you know, understand the mentality of a
right,
sports fan. So I'm not averse to sports. I love sports. I actually spent most of the weekend watching baseball games.
Sure.
Which you can also chalk up as to tradition.
Yeah.
The tradition of stock car racing and IndyCar racing, I just don't understand. And watching it this weekend, I wanted to open my mind to it and say, what is this? Why is this so such a cultural touchstone. People love it. And it really does divide pretty clearly along red and blue lines. When I say red and blue, as you probably know, I'm referring to voting tendencies.
Yeah.
So why is it that there is this divide? What, explain to me the allure of car racing, and maybe we can help to defeat this, you know, very acrimonious political split that we have going on in this country.
You're reaching out, Brendan, is what you're saying.
I definitely am. I don't understand it, and it's not that I don't. I want to understand.
Sure,
I want to be able to watch and enjoy with the masses.
Right.
And I don't get it. It's mind-boggling to me, this sport.
So you actually watched it from beginning to end?
No, I couldn't get through it because I didn't understand it.
Well, I mean, Brendan, you know, I'm a sports fan also. So for just a quick moment here, I'm going to try to play devil's advocate here.
Good. Maybe you are the person who can explain this to me.
I agree with your ambivalence, but I'm going to play devil's advocate here and see if I can take the other side and try to explain to you the allure. Because I do have friends who are kind of NASCAR fans and one of the biggest draws of going to a NASCAR event for them is that you can bring your own beer.
Okay.
That's huge.
But, I mean, can you do that at, like, the dog pits, too? Like, why does it have to be at NASCAR and IndyCar? Bringing your beer to something, you can do that anywhere.
Yeah.
I mean, people just like to watch car crashes, too.
Like the car crashes.
Wait, Chris, put that call on hold. Actually, the calls are coming through right now. So I want people, if you can call in and explain to me, because, Dan, I'm not buying what you have to say.
I'm not doing a very good job of playing devil's advocate
here. All right, 866-303-2270. If you can explain why NASCAR and IndyCar are cultural touchstones and why we can and how we can be interested in them, maybe we can solve this big problem we got. Maybe we can solve this 50-50 voting split. I think we've got some hope here on Memorial Day, Dan.
You know, my brother is actually a huge IndyCar racing fan, and
tell him to call.
that's the thing. He won't, because he doesn't listen to this show, because he can't stand liberals and Democrats.
But see, that's part of the problem. We need liberals who watch this stuff. Look at the phones. They're lighting up.
Yes, I want liberals
on hold.
Call in right now. We want liberals to call in. Good-hearted Democrats, liberals who are car racing fans. Brendan and I are stuck. Chris, I think, is stuck too. We do not understand it. We don't see what the big deal is, but the Indy 500 took place just yesterday. And we want you to call in 866-303-2270 and see if you can sell us on this, because we're just in a quandary.
All right, while we're getting those calls, it is Memorial Day. We're here to remember something very serious, but every week we do remember something a little more like hearted, and we're going to revisit last week's Morning Remembrance with Mark Maron, Dan Pashman, and Mort Mortensen.
Unfortunately, it's that time of the week again when we here at Morning's Edition take a moment at this time of sorrow to reflect in our Morning Remembrance.
As the people of the grieving nation come together to mourn, to remember, and finally to find hope, Morning's Edition joins with them to mourn, remember, and find hope as well. And so we bring you the stories of those who have lost their lives, those who inspire us to carry on. Here now is Morning Sedition grief correspondent, Mort Mortensen.
Already?
Yeah.
All right.
Paul Keene, organic farming pioneer. Mark?
Yeah.
Paul Keene, the former mathematics professor and avowed pacifist, organic farmer who, quote, just wanted to get back to the land, got his wish last month when he was buried in it. I'm allergic to land.
Yeah. He had that feeling.
Yeah. In the late 1930s, while teaching in northern India, Keene met Mohandas Gandhi, whose belief in simple living inspired Keene to get the hell out of India and start a multi-million-dollar business.
Yes, it will.
I had some curry this morning.
Really?
Yeah.
I'm surprised you're not allergic to curry.
Well, it makes me teary-eyed.
Oh, a little bit, but not allergic.
No, not allergic. I don't sneeze or anything. I don't get any asthma. This makes me... Oh, well.
You can be. You want a Kleenex?
I don't think.
Yeah, man. Just let's take care of it. He knows it's running over. It's messy.
So emotional.
Yeah, I understand. It's a hard job you have.
More than half a century, Keene's Walnut Acres Farm produced an array of products, including peanut butter, granola, and instruction booklets on how to sit cross-legged on the lawn wearing earth shoes and playing a flute while deflecting rocks thrown by the cool kids. In the 1940s and 50s, Keene's views on organic farming were considered eccentric, so much so that people labeled him with a communist and even burned crosses on his lawn. Mm. Incidents that probably led to his debut of the world's first organic urine-based fire extinguisher.
No, come on.
I guess it's organic urine-based.
Yeah, I get it. I get it. It's horrifying.
Allergic to urine.
Yeah. I mean, why would you go to the bathroom?
I can't. Keen requested his remains be buried with sea salt and love.
Aww. Yeah.
Henry Corden, voice of Fred Flintstone.
Aww.
Oh, yes. Man.
Henry Corden, who for almost 30 years was famous for voicing the character of Fred Flintstone with his iconic Yabba Dabba Doo, is Yabba Dabba dead. In addition to the popular children's slash adult-oriented cartoon series, Corden also supplied his voice for a string of specials such as The Flintstones Get New Neighbors, Fred's Final Fling, and Fred and Barney Get Gonorrhea Stone. Gonorrhea Stone.
Yeah. Yeah. All right.
All right.
Gonorrhea Stone.
Speaking of stones, I'm allergic to marble dust.
Marble dust? Yeah. What the hell is marble dust?
You understand? I go to museums.
Oh.
Corden reportedly died of multiple puncture wounds after trying to shave himself with a clamshell full of bumblebees and use a porcupine as a hairbrush.
That'll do it.
That'll do it right there.
Yeah.
Corden's unrealistically requested his remains be interred inside the beak of a priceless pterodactyl skeleton. There he goes. Oh. Anyway, this is this has been this morning's remembrance. Until next week, this is Mort Morton's Zane. Who's chopping onions?
Wow. Oh, man, Fred Flint, the voice of Fred Flintstone is Yabba Dabba Dead.
You know who else died this past week?
The Tiger.
The voice of Tony the Tiger.
Yeah,
well,
yeah.
Well, tomorrow, Mort Mortensen will be here tomorrow. And,
special Tuesday Morning Remembrance.
Tuesday Morning Remembrance, and I wonder if he will have that news for us.
I want to hear that.
Well, we do have news. We have a full line of phones here of people telling me and you, Dan Patrick, why NASCAR and IndyCar racing is so popular and helping. There's a conservative on the line here.
Okay.
There's a liberal on the line here, and there's a lot of people who haven't given a party affiliation or anything, but say they know why, and they're going to help us solve the divide here in America. We'll take those calls after the break. Right now, it's 16 past the hour. You're listening to Air America Radio.
Hi, this is Terry Jones from Monty Python. If you're like me, you're tired of having geeks and dogs repeat things you said 30 years ago back to you as if you don't remember saying them and then laughing as if they think they're so damn clever. I mean, wow, you memorized a 30-year-old movie? Oh, good show, old chap. Oh, great. Be President of the United States. Come on. And now for something completely different. It's Morning Sedition on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Morning Sedition, Air America Radio. I'm Dan Pashman here with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. Hey, guys.
Hello.
And we're holding down the fort here. Ordinarily, we are the producers behind the scenes, pulling the strings behind the curtain, etc. But today, we're stepping out on Memorial Day and hosting the show. Tomorrow, we'll be back in our underground bunker. Mark Maron and Mark Riley will return. In the meantime, we're hanging out. We're taking some calls. We're playing some best-of moments from recent weeks of the show. And, hey, come see us in person. Morning Sedition will be broadcasting live this Friday from City Bakery in New York, 18th Street between 5th and 6th Avenue, 6 to 9 a.m. Mike Doty will be there playing music live. We're going to give away free stuff. It's going to be pretty awesome. Right now we're taking some calls. People out there on the phones who are calling to explain. Brendan and I just don't get it. The whole car racing thing, Indy 500.
But I want to get it.
Right.
I want to get it. I want to solve our problem.
We're
here.
Reaching out here.
So we have Rob on the line in Indiana. How are you, Rob? Can you help explain this to us?
Well, I think so. I drive a truck, seeing these people drive on the freeway. I think it's a fantasy, something we all do.
It's a fantasy to watch the car racing?
Yeah, they can relate to it. You know, they drive a car, and that's the main instrument of sport.
So wait, this might actually explain something here, because, you know, urban dwellers like ourselves, Dan and I hardly ever get behind the wheel of a car.
Right.
We use public transportation a lot. There might be something to that, Rob. You know, people in big, wide-open states that tend to vote red, they like getting behind a wheel and going really fast.
Right. They like to get out in a wide highway in Ohio, and suddenly they think that they're Jeff Gordon or Dale Earnhardt Jr.
Yeah, I think that's a lot. Now, I'm a hardcore liberal, but...
Do you like it, Rob? Car racing?
I like it. I'm not nuts about it. I've got people in my family that are just absolutely crazy about it.
And what do they see in it? What do they get excited about?
Again, I think it's something they can relate to. If you take a cab all the time, I'm sure the cab driver
going fast. Well, I know. Yeah, when you sit in that back of a cab, it's like a video game. They seem like they're going to crash at any moment. Thanks for your call, Rob.
Thanks, Rob. You know, I don't buy that, guys. I mean,
Well, you don't buy the what? The fantasy? The fastness?
No, the speed. The fact that drivers... Because I've owned a car since I was, like, 16, you know, and I've been driving a long time, and I've driven pretty much cross-country, and I don't, you know... I don't watch NASCAR because, you know, it reminds me of me going cross country.
Well, then let's ask Tom here. He's a conservative Texan, so maybe I'm profiling, but he's got to know. Tom, what's up?
I have no idea what's up with NASCAR.
Wait, but you're a conservative Texan. Come on, you got to fit the profile.
I actually come from Tom DeLay's district.
Oh, my God, Sugarland.
And I've moved up here to Wisconsin, and it's such a liberal state that the company car they gave you to drive has got three buttons preset to Air America.
Good.
Nice. All right.
I've been listening to you guys, and instead of Rush Limbaugh, I can't find him.
Have you opened your eyes at all, Tom?
Well, I think both of you buy hyperbole by the bushel.
Okay. Is there any hyperbole involved in this, in what we're talking about right now? Do we just don't get it? You seem to be in our camp.
I avoid... NASCAR slightly less than I avoid golf on television. It's boring to me. And I come up here to Wisconsin, which is supposedly a blue state. As a matter of fact, I think the first day in my office, three people stopped by and grilled me on George Bush. Did I vote Republican?
Oh, wow.
They were just real, you know, and I thought, my gosh, you know, it's like they're going to get the wood out and tie me to the stage.
But they all wound up being car racing fans, though, you're going to tell me.
Yeah, they are. They're all NASCAR fans. I'm thinking, gosh, you guys are backwards.
So there's no answer, Dan. There is no answer to anything.
It just makes no sense.
No rhyme or reason.
All right, thanks a lot, Tom.
Thanks a lot.
Well, I'm still sure that we will at one point find a real reason for why this country seems enamored of the need for speed.
Maybe the Republicans just like to go around in circles, and that's, you know, they see NASCAR.
Kalo with the metaphor,
you know?
I like it. I like it. I also would like us to point out that, you know, it was because of Memorial Day that we brought this up. It was the tradition of the Indy 500, and I'd just like to take the time out to say... we are spending some time today remembering Memorial Day and why we're here. I know I had both of my grandfathers serving in World War II, and it was a really important part of me growing up to go out with them to Memorial Day festivities and to really understand why we take a day out of the year. We really should take more than a day. We should take pretty much every day
My father was in Vietnam, and and taking a trip with him to the Veterans Memorial in Washington, D.C. was really a touching moment in my life.
Yeah.
It's amazing.
Yeah, I went there, too, and the greatest thing that I remember seeing there was a guy who was a vet go over to a buddy's name and do a stencil,
right.
a pencil scrubbing, yeah. And he didn't say anything, and he wasn't overtly emotional, but that was just a real acknowledgement that we will always keep these people with us, and regardless of what side of the fence we're on, we say thank you.
It's true. I second that emotion, and I think that it's really sad to realize that there's going to be a whole new generation of people like that, and hopefully probably a whole new monument for this Iraq war.
not far from where the Vietnam Memorial is, and that 10 or 20 or 30 years from now, we may take our children to that memorial, and they may see one of our compatriots on that wall, very stenciling true. Out the name of someone who may die today in Iraq, because people are still dying, and we don't want to forget that. Coming up in just a moment, Andy Richter.
Yeah, we're lighting the mood a little bit, and Andy Richter, as you know, from formerly of Conan O'Brien. You see him in a lot of movies now, and he's in the new movie Madagascar. We're going to play his interview with Mark Maron.
That's right. It's 27 past the hour. You're listening to Morning's Edition on Air America Radio.
Morning's Edition with Mark Maron and Mark Riley on Air America Radio.
Past the hour, Morning's Edition, Air America Radio. That's the sound of Mike Doty. He's going to be playing live at the City Bakery with us this Friday in our broadcast. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald and Chris Lopresto. We're filling in for Mark Maron and Mark Riley, who will return tomorrow. The email address for the show is sedition@airamericaradio.com. That's sedition@airamericaradio.com. Drop us a line. Let us know how we're doing. You know, there's still a couple of weekend time slots left here on Air America. If you guys think that maybe Brendan and I should be slipped into one of those slots, feel free to drop us a line.
Ever the opportunist, Dan Pashman. I think people should also send if you're Mike Doty fans, send in your favorite Mike Doty requests, and maybe we'll get him to play them on Friday at City Bakery. I know we're going to give away some of his CDs, and I have that CD, Haughty Melodic, Mike Doty's new album. So come on down. It's going to be a great time.
Absolutely. And that email address for Mike Doty-related information is, or rather, questions, et cetera, sedition@airamericaradio.com. We've been playing some of the best moments from Mark and Mark the last few weeks, and we're going to continue that right now. Brendan, what do we got right now?
Well, we got Andy Richter.
Yes.
And you probably know him as the co-host of Late Night with Conan O'Brien for 7 years. He left in 1999 to pursue his own goals, one of them being Madagascar, which is the animated movie that's out this weekend. Let's take a listen to Mark Maron sitting down with Andy Richter.
In the studio with me now is a guy who used to do talk shows. He spent 6 years on Late Night with Conan O'Brien, which earned him 5 consecutive Emmy nominations. You've seen him in plenty of movies like Elf, Scary Movie 2, and in his own TV show, Andy Richter Controls the Universe. So in preparing for an animated voice, you just did a Russian accent for me effortlessly off when we were off the air. But didn't you have a weird accent in New York Minute?
What is it? I had Chinese. Well, you know, speaking English with a Chinese accent. It was just pure racism is what it was. It was just, and I, no, there was a scene. It was supposed to be like a Caucasian guy who was raised by the Chinese mafia.
Oh, okay.
And was it
like Jerry Lewis? Like,
oh, absolutely. It was, yeah, it was, you know, oh, so good to see you. Come on, come over here. And aside from having a child that eats like he's angry at me, and needing the job, I thought, when am I ever going to get a chance to be in a movie where I get to play it?
All right, buddy. All right, Andy. I've been hosting this talk show for a little more than a year, and I got to be honest with you, it was not easy at the beginning.
Right.
3 months. And I had no idea just how difficult it really was until I saw myself on television in this documentary about the network.
Uh-huh.
And then I realized that you also were on a talk show that was brand new.
Right.
And no one knew. How did you feel during the beginning, when you were on the Conan O'Brien show, just like, you know, the weird skidding that you must have felt at least for a half a year?
Yeah. Oh, it was more than that. Well, see, I was lucky enough to not have to carry the bulk of the interviewing.
Yeah.
You know, there were people who would say to me, like, you know, they would compliment me on how funny I was, as if it was some sort of competition among all the people involved.
Yes.
Usually, and I would sometimes say, like, well, it's easy because I'm like a designated hitter.
Right.
But a designated hitter who gets to choose when he goes to bat.
You know,
I can sit there and there. And I would say sometimes, because, you know, there'd be, there's the monologue, and then there's what we call the desk bit, and then there's usually the top of act one comedy, then there's two acts of interview, and then there's the middle act bit. And frequently I would not be sort of written into those bits.
Yeah.
And I used to say to the floor director all the time, I used to say, like, you know, if I play my cards right, I don't have to say a word tonight. And there were some shows where I really did go. He'd say, you know, Andy, how you doing? Pretty good. How are you? And that would be it until the end of the show. And depending on if I was in a cranky mood or you know whatever.
And that's hilarious because I have never heard or seen anybody say a negative word about Andy Richter.
Oh, really?
In terms of the Conan O'Brien show.
Absolutely.
Oh. But, you know, in terms of, you know, other stuff.
Right.
I know. You want me to get the list out?
Yeah.
But,
well, I'm handsy.
Yeah.
That's the problem.
In all truth, I've never heard anyone say anything bad about you. But that is, I just realized that is true, that the host is obviously going to take all the hits,
whether
he deserves them or not.
Right.
And you probably got a lot of this, like, man, sorry, dude, you got to sit there and do this.
Yeah, no, I was always like, well, are you kidding? I just sit here. And it's like, and there would be, and the only sort of thing is that there are times when you got something to say, like something, and then the moment passes and it just is sort of wasted. So there is like wasted material just because of timing. You don't want to go, wait, back up, guys.
Yeah.
You know that thing you were saying about shirt? You can't do that. But it is true that then there's a lot of times too, and especially like if Conan and I were, being crabby with each other, and there'd be a bad interview. It was just so much fun, you know, like, to just kind of, like, having fun, Conan. I'm not, and he'd look at me, and he'd be like,
no,
help me out. I'm like, no, no, I won't.
How often did that happen?
Oh, not that often. I miss working there. But it's mostly, a lot of it is, it's more like a New York LA thing,
sure.
And it's more like a prime time versus late night thing because, you know, we were left so alone. There was such a serious lack of adult supervision on the Conan show because we're in New York. All the real jerks, the corporate people are in Los Angeles, it was more like you were neglected children who had parents who were jet setters who would come home every once in a while and yell at you,
right?
You know, and but then they'd be gone
and they'd buy you suits and things.
They could buy you suits, but and it was way worse in the beginning because there were network executives who were like some guy that was just like Don Olmeyer's pal, and he was in charge of the studio or something,
right.
And he knew nothing. He was like one of those like Gucci loafer with no socks kind of guys,
and then
always khaki pants and navy blazer with brass buttons, you know, just and would come in, and his solution to Conan would be things. He would always say things like, "You gotta put some energy in it. You gotta run up into the audience." He would say that every time. Run up into the audience. Like, and then what? That was, and Conan actually, I was there once, and I was like, and then what? You know, just liven it up. Like, oh, okay. That sounds, what a great idea. But that guy is no, that guy left. But initially there were people that just treated him like garbage.
But
just
you
treated him so badly.
Who, Conan?
Yeah.
I know. It was rough. But he seems okay. You guys talk still?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah. We're going to run out of time here in a second. And I don't want to, I want to do the movie justice.
Oh, right.
Yeah, I want to do the movie justice.
Madagascar.
Now, this is a challenging film about?
About a friendship.
Oh.
Yeah.
Between?
Animals. It's interspecial friendship.
Oh.
Namely about a lion and a zebra who are pals.
Uh-huh.
And, it's about zoo animals. Four zoo animals. A lion, a zebra, a hippo, and a giraffe. Yet another movie about a lion, a zebra, a hippo, and a giraffe.
Here we go again.
And they escape from the zoo and are sort of sent back to the wild, but they end up falling off a ship and ending up on
the beach of Madagascar.
Which is, I always love this in cartoons.
Yeah.
Where how, like Mickey Mouse. Mickey Mouse can have a pet dog, and I'm sure that there's a million stand-ups that have done bits on this.
I don't know any. But
Mickey Mouse has his pet dog.
Yeah.
Pluto.
Yeah.
But then he's also got a pal who can talk and drive a car who's a dog.
Goofy.
Called Goofy.
Sure.
And then somehow there's this, like, well, some dogs are retarded and remain dogs, and other dogs... Well, I mean, he's goofy. He's still mildly retarded. But he at least has, you know, enough human stuff. And that's the way this is. Like, you know, like the lemurs are cute and you don't want to eat them.
Right.
But fish, apparently, eat all you want.
Beautiful. Andy Richter, thanks for being with us.
All right, thanks.
Mark Maron with Andy Richter on a program a little few days ago, and Mark will be back tomorrow along with Mark Riley. I am Brendan McDonald here with Dan Pashman. We're going to take this show home, and in a few minutes we'll talk about George Bush's love affair with hand sanitizer, as well as this craze that's sweeping the UK and boiling Kalo's blood. We'll come back to talk about that here on Air America Radio, 44 past the hour.
Morning Tradition, delivering you from evil. In 3 hours or less, Air America Radio.
Past the hour, morning edition, Air America Radio. My name is Dan Pashman. I'm here with Brendan McDonald and Kalo Chris Lopresto. As Mark Maron so often says, we are going to bring this thing in for landing. Mark and Mark will be back tomorrow in full force. We're holding down the fort for them in the meantime, and we would like to point out that Morning's Edition, the only show on Air America that is here for you live on Memorial Day, bringing you the news of the day, bringing you some fresh, brand-new material here hanging out. For those of you who, not everyone does get off on Memorial Day. We got some emails from Brazil, from Northern Ireland. We have listeners all over the globe. Not everyone gets off on Memorial Day, so thank you, everyone, for tuning in. Mark and Mark back tomorrow. And we got some great stuff we want to get into here as we bring this thing in for landing. I love this story here, Brendan, from today's New York Times. I find this hilarious. They did a profile of President Bush's personal assistant, this guy Blake Gottsman. He's 25 years old. He never graduated from college. He's going to go back eventually, but he got this gig because he used to date one of the president's daughters.
So wait, what's the gig? He's his assistant?
He's like his little slave boy, his house boy. He follows him around, and, you know, whenever he needs something, he gets it for him. He carries his bags. He's just sort of his house boy.
Boy, yeah.
Right, but that's what I find most interesting about this. George W. Bush, the man of the people, the everyman, Mr. Blue Collar, I clear brush from my own ranch, I'm a real cowboy,
yeah, fake ranch.
W. Bush, right, fake ranch, exactly. When he spends, after a long, hard hour or two of shaking hands with ordinary, average, everyday Americans, at least the ones who managed to get through the
screening process,
the thought police to get into one of his rallies, so these are his supporters anyway, after an hour or two of shaking the hands of his own supporters, you know what the first thing he does is? He washes his hands with hand sanitizer.
So this guy really is a lotion boy.
Yeah. I mean, this president who prides himself on being such a man of the people, after a day of glad-handing with his own supporters, it feels so dirty and defouled.
Right, that's the funny thing, is that, you know, you can understand if people say, oh, I got germs, you know, and I'm going to go touch a dignitary's hand now, and I don't want to give him a cold.
Right.
But just the image of him going, unclean,
right,
unclean,
right, right.
I touched them.
Get the stink of these normal people off my hand.
Right, right.
Or maybe he's just so paranoid that maybe some of his own people might put something on their own hand, like some kind of acid, like happened in 24, on the television in 24. And he's freaked out. He doesn't want
Wait. You put acid on your hand, and then you burn through your hand?
And apparently there's something you can put on your hand, and it happened on the second season, 24, and the president was shaking hands with supporters, and the president, a couple minutes later, was then crippled because there was acid eating
his, acid?
Yes, his hand.
Like, it ate his hand away?
Well, yes. His flesh was being eaten.
That sounds so plausible.
You know what you need for that? that, a little Purell.
Yeah.
That just picks that right
that's
up.
That'll take care of the acid. He needs his own little Blake Gutzman.
You know, Kalo, while you're on the mic there, I just want to know how you feel about this whole thing out in the U.K., with Coldplay.
Kalo's a big Coldplay fan.
For those of you who didn't hear us talking about this earlier, Coldplay, biggest band in the world, according to them.
Yes, and coming out with the new album.
Right, and
this Tuesday.
This hit single, what's it called?
Speed of Sound.
Yeah, this was supposed to debut at number one on the UK pop charts. It didn't do it. Didn't make it.
No, what beat out Speed of Sound by Coldplay?
This. That's not a joke.
Yeah, that's catchy. I mean, come on.
The cell phone ringtone known as Crazy Frog Axel F, a ringtone based on the sound of a revving Swedish moped, first used on mobile phones, is now the number one hit single in the UK.
You know, I wouldn't mind so much if the name wasn't so insane. Like, what is it?
Crazy Frog Axel F.
There you go. Yeah, that's normal.
Yeah. Well, you know, I mean,
I'm going to put that on a CD.
Right. There. You can make millions, dude.
Yeah.
I mean, Coldplay is apparently, they're going to try to get it up to number one by next week. But there's another tune, by a Dutch lawnmower.
Right.
Ringtone that is really climbing the charts. And Coldplay is some stiff competition.
I'm really looking forward to that song. Oh, beep, beep.
You know, I'm just really happy that Morning Sedition can't put our, we can't put our ringtones on the,
We're going to do that
because I think no matter what's opening up, whatever's coming out this week, nothing can top the iNews 5000 headline translator open.
A little bit of this.
Who doesn't want that for there?
Maybe when they get a voicemail, it'll sound like this. And then maybe when they have the wrong number, it'll sound like this.
Freak-on.
But Brendan, that's your voice doing those silly sound effects.
Yeah.
Wouldn't it weird you out if you were in a restaurant or a bar somewhere, and all of a sudden your voice started coming out of someone's pocket?
I would have arrived. That's where I need to be. The best thing is, I know that I've actually gotten some fans with that little ditty there.
Really?
And because of that, my reciprocation is going to be to do that live this coming Friday.
Oh, wow.
When Morning Sedition airs from City Bakery in New York on 18th Street. So if you cannot stand the fact that this is a taped bit that we play and you really need that live performance, get on down to City Bakery.
And by
we'll
the way,
do it live.
Anything can happen when it's live. You might mess up or maybe even change.
I might say dun 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 instead of dun 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 da.
Exactly.
Yeah. So we could be on all different wavelengths.
And there's no 10-second delay when you're there live, my friend.
Right.
I mean, if you hit the wrong note on that thing, there's no taking it back.
Right.
And you definitely want to be there live, especially with Morning Sedition, especially with Mark Maron.
Getting croissants and sugar and coffee all morning.
He's going to be in rare form.
It's going to be pretty awesome. And I'm trying to convince Milf Cardinal Milfington, who does Rapture Watch every Friday, to actually go out and to come in his full Catholic
cardinal
regalia.
He doesn't always wear that. Sometimes he dresses down a little.
Sometimes he comes down in his civvies.
But he'll come down, we'll entice him with a croissant and everything.
And, for everyone going to City Bakery or people just on the fence, maybe they won't, here's a little taste of what you will expect at City Bakery.
Why a former Navy JAG opposes Gonzalez and your deep, dark, liberal can f***ing why...
Yeah, that was live Mark Maron, wasn't it?
Wow.
That's what happens when Mark is live and unrestricted.
That's right.
Wow. So we're getting letters for that one, aren't we? There was one that was really close on that. Holy crap, my heart stopped for a second.
Yeah. You know what's going to happen. That's the point.
And,
Friday.
And come down and get some coffee and some Danish and some other sweets. Sweets. Dan, you just had, what was the name
Holy
of
crap, you guys. I had a freaking outer body experience at this place, Cold Stone Creamery. All right?
Yeah.
It's been talked up to me. I've heard really good things. I was in D.C. Over the weekend with my girlfriend. We visited our friends J.C. and Aaron, and they took me to Cold Stone Creamery. They have a flavor of ice cream there called cake batter, which is actually kind of a misnomer. It should really be called cake frosting.
Oh.
This ice cream was amazing. It goes into my ice cream hall of fame. And I just,
Why?
There's one opening. It's... It's like the perfect comb. I love frosting. When I get cake, I pull out the cake part and I just pretty much eat the frosting with a little bit of cake. And it was the perfect combination of the flavors and richness and butteriness of frosting with the flavor and richness and sweetness and creaminess of ice cream.
Wow. So chalk that up to another thing that we've plugged on the air here that we won't get any kind of buyback from.
Yeah.
Put it in there with Dyson
right.
And iPod.
Dunkin' Donuts.
AutoZone.
Right.
Come on. We are just shameless shills for these places that don't even give a crap about us. But anyway, well, we give a crap about the show tomorrow, which is going to feature Michael McKean and Annette O'Toole,
yes.
The songwriting couple behind A Mighty Wind and Waiting for Guffman.
They're going to be performing in the studio.
Right, and you know Michael McKean from Laverne and Shirley and Annette O'Toole from Superman.
Sure.
And also Matt Taibbi and Mark Maron, Mark Riley.
Most
back
importantly,
where they
be
belong.
Back.
Yes. And don't forget City Bakery this Friday. I'm Brendan McDonald. Thanks a lot for having me with you this morning.
It was my pleasure. You guys, everyone did a great job. I'm Dan Pastor for Chris Lopresto. This is Air America Radio.
Morning Sedition on Air America.